Well, Dan, we've got the commissioner of the Department of Consumer Protection, Michelle Siegel, with us this morning.
Brad, she's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. And Commissioner, good morning. Welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always a pleasure. And I know one of the big stories is that you have issued a new RFA, request for application for dispensary facilities. Why is this being issued now?
Well, one, it's partly a result of the great success of this program. Right now we have over 22,000 patients in the state who are benefiting from that. And just to give you a little comparison, just 2 years ago in January of 2016, there were only 8,000 patients. So it's been a really successful program. It's helping a lot of patients. And as the number of patients grow, the need for more retail outlets, which is essentially what dispensaries are. They're like pharmacies. We need more of those. One, it creates more convenience for patients because now there's more places you can go, and it injects more competition into this market, which also is always to the benefit of consumers.
Commissioner, for those who don't know, and there are some that don't know just what this is, could you just explain it briefly for us?
The RFA, you mean, or our medical marijuana program in general?
Yeah, the marijuana program in general.
So this is, it's been around in Connecticut for several years now, and what's really unique about Connecticut is we have really the first of its kind true medical model. So for us in Connecticut, we really wanted to maintain the relationship patients have with their physician and with their pharmacist. So unlike in other states, the person who's dispensing medical marijuana at a dispensary is a licensed pharmacist, so they understand how to work with doctors and patients to discuss medicine. They know how to think about drug interactions and those types of things. So we have now four producers. Those are basically the manufacturers of medical marijuana, and then currently nine dispensary facilities, which are being regulated and licensed very similar to pharmacies. And with the success and growth of the program, we're looking to add to the number of dispensaries so that there's just more options for patients.
So if there's a potential dispensary out there, what's needed for them to apply?
So the best thing, if you're interested in applying or interested in seeing kind of what we're going to be looking at, you can see the application on our website at ct.gov/DCP, and it's under What's New. But overall, what we're really looking for is what's going to be the best quality business, both for the state of Connecticut and for the patients. And so our application is really, it's quite detailed. We want to understand what's your location and site plan. Has zoning approved you being in that area? We're going to do a careful look at the financial background and wherewithal of the businesses. We want to see their business plan. We want to know who the key employees are going to be. Of course, security measures is another really important thing that we're looking at. And then we are looking at some other things to see how they're going to really contribute to their community and, you know, what they're going to offer as a compassionate care program.
Now, when it comes to zoning, are there certain restrictions that the state oversees as far as a location of one of the dispensaries?
At the state level, no. We will accept applications from anywhere in the state. Now, a lot of towns have either issued complete moratoriums or have otherwise put limits on terms of where these can be. And what we've always avoided and successfully is trying to force a town to have a dispensary where their zoning wouldn't permit it. So we've always respected that. And one of the things we look for in these applications is, are you in an area that is allowed under that town zoning laws?
Commissioner, do you have any personal thoughts yourself about this whole marijuana issue? There is a good many people who feel that this is the next step for Connecticut, and the reason that it is the next step is because of the money that it will bring in. However, we don't hear very many people talking about how this is going to affect some of the people who live here and what this is going to do to them health-wise. Is that ever discussed?
We're certainly kind of following the debate on whether to have a recreational marijuana program in Connecticut, and I anticipate if that happens, Consumer Protection would be responsible for overseeing it. ultimately, our role is not so much to make those policy decisions, but we're really available to help inform policymakers and give them sort of information that we have in terms of what would be involved in running a program, and a lot would depend on how the recreational model would even be set up. So at the end of the day, we're going to leave that to sort of the policymakers to determine, but we're going to do whatever we need to do to make sure whatever gets passed and whatever program's in place in Connecticut, that we're going to make it the best we can and really make it a responsible program so that the people using the products and the surrounding community are not negatively impacted.
Now, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has recently announced he's rolling back Obama-era guidance that enabled a lot of these states to run legal marijuana programs. Will there be a problem with the Connecticut program and, for that matter, the RFA process, Commissioner?
So that's obviously, we're all kind of taking a wait-and-see approach to see, now that he's rolled back that guidance, what Attorney General Sessions will actually do in terms of enforcement. I feel very good about the program Connecticut has, and we're going to keep following state law. And state law has created a great medical program that's benefiting a lot of people. And we intend, until we're really told not to stay the course. We want to grow the program. We want to continue helping patients and doing these things. And the reality is, Connecticut's not alone. There's over half the states in the country now have some sort of marijuana program, most medical, a few recreational. So any decision to suddenly try to change the federal approach in a drastic way is actually going to impact most of this country. So we'll see what happens, but we definitely are going to continue moving forward and complying with state law and doing what we can for all these patients.
For people who want to apply to be able to use medical marijuana, what's the procedure again? I guess they have to put up money. Just run through that quickly, Commissioner.
Right. So if you're a patient, the way Connecticut's program is set up, you have to have one of about 22 conditions. And again, if you go to our website, ct.gov/DCP, under programs and services, you can kind of get into our medical marijuana program and read about it and see those listed conditions. Your first step is going to go and talk to your physician. We expect physicians to be exercising their medical judgment and making a decision. Do traditional medicines, are they available to help with this, or is kind of the treatment plan at a point where medical marijuana is the better option? If the physician believes in their judgment that medical marijuana is right for a patient, what they're going to do is, and this is all done online, they'll certify to our agency that this patient has one of these conditions, he or she's been diagnosed with it, and that, in their opinion, medical marijuana, the benefits are going to outweigh the risks. Once that happens, the patient can go in, register with us, and it's, again, online system. Once they're registered, they can go out to one of these nine dispensary facilities and begin buying medicine.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. Very.
Now, Commissioner, while we have you here, a couple of other topics. We had State Representative Melissa Gibran on the program, and she talked about a bill of hers that was passed and signed into law, the Cottage Food Law. And she said it was passed 2.5 years ago, and that DCP still hasn't come up with regulations for this law. What can you tell us about this?
And she did claim that it would help an awful lot of people as far as selling goods and everything else. And I guess the big thing is, how come you haven't, or your organization has not looked into this and passed, got it on the road?
Well, kind of a couple clarifications. So one, we have actually sent in regulations a couple of times and they've been rejected. So just want to make sure that that's clear. And so the challenge with cottage foods, I get it's like a nice thing and it's good for, a way for people to sort of start up a small business. But again, there's a lot of public health and safety issues surrounded by food sales. So what you don't want, what we don't want to see happen is somebody's now making food in their home kitchen, not necessarily following all the safety protocols we expect of other food manufacturers. Now it gets out there and suddenly there's a salmonella or a listeria or something else out there. What we need is, one, we want to prevent that in the first place and make sure whether you're doing it in a traditional food manufacturing place or in somebody's kitchen in their house, that it's being done safely, so whatever gets out into the marketplace, people aren't getting sick. But if we do find a situation where people are getting sick, it's really important to be able to nip that in the bud, which means being able to track down. So you start getting people reporting these negative symptoms, track down, okay, what did they eat? Where is it being sold? Where else is this being sold? How can we, like, identify that? And if we need, do a recall. So there's a lot that goes into kind of food safety that we want to be sure is there. And so initially we did submit regulations, and it put into place a lot of this public health and safety requirements. Unfortunately, the way the statute is written, it didn't really give us the authority to do that. And so those were rejected and sort of said, well, you went beyond your authority. So then we tried to put in some that were really kind of vague and didn't do much of anything at all. But those were then rejected because...
Rejected by whom, Commissioner? Where do these regulations go to?
So I'm not sure exactly where in the process. They eventually make it to the Legislative Regulation Review Committee. I'm not positive where in our process of getting them to there they got ultimately rejected. But with the second set of regulations, the Department of Public Health, and we completely agreed with them, pointed out that if these go into place, you're likely to invite sort of a risk to public health and safety with having all this food out there that's completely unregulated and being sold in the marketplace. And so what I think would be ideal would be for the legislature to give us the authority to create some regulations that both allow this industry to move forward, but with some public sort of safety safeguards in place.
But until you get that, you're not going to do anything, right?
Well, it's difficult. If we do something too vague, it's not really protecting the public. If we do something more strict, we're exceeding our authority.
And, you know, I think this is where, and it's not your fault, Commissioner, but I think this is where the public really gets aggravated.
A
bill is proposed, the bill is debated, the bill in this case is passed in both chambers, signed into law by the governor, and it's nowhere near being implemented, and it's almost 3 years later, and I think it goes to the root cause of regulation after regulation, to the point where people say, why bother even passing a bill? Because if it doesn't pass muster, even if it's signed into law, even if it's passed the constitutional test, why bother? Because you've got to go through all of what you're talking about.
I can see in this one industry people may be frustrated by the process, but overall, and I think, like as we're talking about before, our medical marijuana program is a perfect example of a statute that was passed. It really gave us some clear guidance on what our regulations should look like. We got regulations out fairly quickly. We got a business up and running, and now we have over 22,000 patients who are benefiting from this. So there are a lot of laws, and so it's always easy when you have so many laws on the books to find one or two that have some hiccups and that create some frustration. But all in all, there's a lot of laws, a lot of regulations that we're overseeing that are helping people tremendously.
Okay. Commissioner, about a minute left. Quickly, what can you tell us about the super lottery drawing? And, I mean, there's obviously concern about how that turned out.
I think most of what's out there, obviously there was a mistake made, and everybody feels badly about that. The second drawing fortunately went off without any problems at all yesterday, and we're investigating right now to understand kind of where did things go wrong that led to the mistake in the first drawing, and we hope to wrap that up fairly quickly.
I mean, you understand how frustrated people are. I mean, supposedly you've got
big
all these
time.
Checks and balances in place, and something like this happens.
It's understandable that people are frustrated, and we definitely want to figure out where did things go wrong so that we don't have that happen again.
Right. Commissioner, always a pleasure. Thanks very much. We enjoy these monthly visits. You certainly educate our audience.
That's for sure.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Take care.
Have a good morning.
You too.
Bye.